Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is One Man's Opinion Today. We are April 15th. I am one co-host, Dr. Paul Murata.
And I'm the other co-host, Brendan Colafranceschi.
Welcome to episode 9. We will introduce you to aspects of financial wealth, healthcare, some random topics of the day, of course, and some sports activities. We heard last week, which was probably negative news, of course, that the inflation rate, monthly rate anyway, at the U.S. sort of ticked up, which some would say maybe was expected, but it really hit the markets hard. We're waiting to hear from Canada later this week about
tomorrow,
that.
Tomorrow,
the interest rates. And I guess what they do with, inflation rates is how they will subsequently affect interest rates. And I guess that's what I wanted to talk about today, particularly how it might affect home buyers. Because my general impression would be that there's a lot of people waiting on the sidelines to maybe purchase their home. Prices of homes may have come down a little bit, but with interest rates being so high, that mortgage rate is still very hefty. And I guess if we look forward over the next 3, 6, 9 months, what do we think the interest rates will do?
Right. Yeah. So as you mentioned, inflation did tick up in the United States in March. So it went from 3.2% to 3.5%. That's counterintuitive to what they're trying to accomplish. Obviously, they want to see inflation get more into the 2 to 3% band, like we discussed before.
It doesn't have to be a smooth ride down. There could be little bumps along the way.
Well, if you want the Federal Reserve and if you want the Bank of Canada to cut rates, they want to see a sustained downward pressure on inflation month over month. You want to see that go down for them to accomplish their goal and then finally start to cut rates.
So when these rates do get cut, maybe they will, maybe they won't, and when they do, I suppose they'll do so slowly, that really shouldn't affect purchase of a home in the immediate term.
Yeah, well, two sides to that coin. If they do decrease rates, I see it going down. Many of the consensus right now is that it's going to be in June of 2024. Some said March, now it's June. I think it'll be later than that, is just my opinion. If it does go down, you might see 25 basis points at the very outset.
As I said, there might be all these people waiting on the sidelines to jump in. And I think when they see this, say, quarter point decrease, whether that be quarter two or quarter three, are they all going to jump in and then start driving the prices higher because of, say, bidding wars?
That's the flip side. So you have those rates come down. Maybe it entices, let's, for example, use two buyers right now. So the rates come down, now you have five buyers. So if they're both, if all five are going in on a property and they're all interested in the same one, well, yeah, you're going to start to see bidding wars again. You're going to start to see over-ask offers, which is inflationary, and then drives the inflation back up.
There may be time, I guess in my opinion, maybe now is sort of the time. I don't think interest rates are necessarily going to go up in the near future. They may stabilize, meaning no change, or start to go down. Why not jump in now, beat the crowd, beat the rush? And on a variable rate mortgage, you'll probably get that decrease over time anyway.
Right. From an affordability standpoint, if you looked at it as rates are today, and you ran a calculation that say rates are 0.5% cheaper than today, but if you paid $150,000 less for the house, you may still be further ahead.
So I guess we'll know over the next, I guess, quarter or two what interest rates are going to do. But I think there may be a rush out in the market and for other large items, for that matter, where interest rates are high.
Right. This upward tick in the inflation rate, it doesn't just affect the homes like we're talking about. It doesn't just affect mortgages like we're talking about. It sort of trickles downstream. So you're going to end up with automobile purchases. Those are going to be more expensive. There's many downward stream items that these interest rates and inflation all affect.
Well, speaking about automobiles, there may be a very hefty price on one particular automobile.
Which one's that?
The Ford Bronco of O.J. Simpson's.
Oh, yeah, O.J. He passed away.
O.J. passed away. Died from prostate cancer. O.J. Simpson died age 76 of prostate cancer, which, you know, from a health perspective, I guess that does shed some positive light on his life in a way that it does highlight how common prostate cancer is. Obviously, we're speaking to men only on this, but there's lots of insecurities about who should get screened for prostate cancer, how should they get screened, at what age they should get screened. And I think the wellness tip I have is for prostate, most individuals have heard of this PSA test. It's a blood test, prostate-specific antigen. It's not the best test, and that's why some of these recommendations for screening are different from country to country and society to society. In general, over the age of 50 or 55 would be the start of screening. If you have a high-risk family member, brother, father, father with prostate cancer, Grena can start lower, age 40. The reason why it's not widely adopted is because there's a lot of false positives, meaning you get a high test and you don't have cancer. The problem with that is when you get a high test, people investigate with biopsies that can lead to complications like bleeding and a host of things. So right now, I think for the men listening and myself, I'm in this age group, you have to think about prostate screening and how to go about doing it. This test is simple, it's a blood test, but just be cautious and be wary that it is not a perfect test. However, a low number is reassuring, but once again, a low number also doesn't necessarily always exclude cancer. So back to OJ, I think he's bringing forward this prostate cancer screening in men, and I think it's important.
An interesting fact I saw on that was OJ's entire defense team from his trial, and now OJ himself, all passed away from prostate cancer. So it was kind of interesting to see that it was all the same disease. But I'm hoping that if the procession or the funeral itself is in California, I'm hoping one of the California Ford dealers steps up and supplies a Bronco, a white Bronco, to carry OJ to his final resting place.
All right, B. Cola, you know what season we're entering. NHL playoffs. It's been a long season. There's been some ups and some downs. And I guess before it kicks off, we're probably going to have to pick our individual teams that might advance all the way.
Yeah, so we got a big game tonight. Detroit Red Wings are making a push for the playoffs, and they're playing Montreal. I think it's the end of the first period. They're currently down 2-1. It's my favorite team. I haven't been in the playoffs for a few years now after the longest playoff run of 25 plus years in the postseason.
Could be the year of Detroit, just after their football experience.
I hope so.
I like the Dallas Stars. I think the last 10 games or so, they've shown, if about 8 wins in that, they're on a bit of a, you know, it's a good time to peak, right, going into playoffs.
It is, yeah. You want to be playing your best hockey going into the postseason.
Well, that's my opinion. The Dallas Stars to take it all. What about yourself?
The playoffs are hard because you can have an 8th seed come in there and win the Stanley Cup. You know, you have the LA Kings, who did it twice, I believe, as an 8th seed. They've made the playoffs again this year. But I think I'm going to go with the Florida Panthers.
Florida Panthers.
Strong team, good goaltending.
Well, you've heard our two picks. We're bringing in really the number one hockey fan. Happens to be my son, Connor Murata, who's been following hockey since a young age, mostly because he couldn't play it very well. Connor, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. You guys left out your FanDuel and Bet365 sponsorships with those picks.
Oh, yeah. Who's FanDuel picking to win it all?
I think it's the Oilers are favored, or actually the Avalanche are the favors here.
It hasn't been written for the NHL, so we don't know who's going to win. Neither does FanDuel. Help us out. Who are you taking all the way?
Well, you know, you went to the craps table with a loaded die here. You know I'm a diehard Leafs fan, so I'm going to, you know, continue on the train of the Leafs, fortunately or unfortunately. You know, been following them for a very long time, so I can't break stride on them yet. Everyone kind of knows this story. I don't need to go into the history of the team and the heartache that they've been involved with the past couple of years and even beyond that. But, you know, long story short, it comes down to the big boys. You know, there's a lot of trepidation in Leafland about the starting goalie, the defense pairs, the third, the fourth line. You know, all that kind of gets thrown out the window in playoff time. It comes down to your big boys, and if your big boys are producing, you know, you're going to go far. And
this sounds like an interview we could have done every year for the last couple of years.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. So everyone's holding their breath that the, you know, Matthews, Marner, they show up, but yeah, who knows if they're actually going to show up.
A lot of support for the Leafs, I'm sure, around this area.
I'm glad you brought up the defense and the goaltending, because goaltending's a huge impact when it comes to playoff time. When you got a hot goalie, you tend to go far. So the Leafs, I don't know, they don't have the goaltending, and they don't have the defense, which is their Achilles heel every year. Do you think they can overcome it?
No, you're absolutely right. They and, you know, to be honest, the last couple of weeks, the goaltending has been shaky at best. They don't trust Wall anymore, so it looks like it'll be Samsonov kind of getting the nod in game one of the playoffs, which it looks like they're going to play Florida in Florida on Saturday in Sunrise. So that's going to be a tough test for them. But, you know, you got to kind of play with as much amnesia as possible as a goal. You got to flip the switch and hopefully get into playoff mode fast. I don't trust it. Leafs fans don't trust it. But, you know,
this might be the year is what you're saying, though.
Yeah, you know, we say the same thing every year, us Leafs fans. We've been saying that for since 67,
okay, well,
since they won
the cup. We got the Stars from myself. We've got Florida from B. Cola. We got Connor Murata taking on the Leafs with probably a lot more followers behind you than our picks. Do you know what FanDuel's odds are on the Leafs to win it all?
You know, they're crafty, right? They always cater to the Toronto market. Same thing with the Yankees and all that. The Leafs always start the year after the Stanley Cup Finals with the second best odds behind whoever won it the year prior. So they probably have the second or third best odds, because FanDuel knows that we're a bunch of suckers and everyone's going to put a bunch of future bets on the Leafs to win the Stanley Cup, and ultimately they're probably going to get bounced by Florida in six games. So, you know, it's a tale as old as time.
I was going to say a pretty good bet would be to bet on the Leafs to go out in the first round. So I wonder what yeah. FanDuel's paying for that.
You might be looking at minus money on your return, but you never know. You know, fingers crossed. I'll be tuned in intently. I know the playoffs aren't set yet. There's still a couple games going on. So
keep you posted. You keep us posted. We'll have you back through the playoff run, and we'll see which one of us comes through.
Yeah, but I'm not coming back on if the Leafs get bounced in the first round. So they'll have to be through to the second round, and then I'll come on for a second appearance. But thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks for your input.
Dr. P, a couple of episodes ago, we talked about etiquette, especially in public places.
Yes, we did.
We talked about the feet up on the seat at a baseball stadium. You recently traveled. You were on an airplane. I thought it was timely and fitting that we talked about airplane etiquette. And specifically, you know when the airplane reaches the gate?
Yes.
And, you know, as soon as that basically airplane puts itself in park, everybody stands up.
And jumps in the aisle.
Jumps in the aisle, grabbing bags, opening overhead compartments.
30, like, 40 rows behind.
What are you doing?
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I hope people that listen, that take planes, and when they stop, you can take your seatbelt off. That may make you a little more comfortable. But there's no need to jump up in the aisle. You're waiting 20 minutes to disembark. You're irritating the people who you're rubbing your bum to their faces with. And you're not going anywhere.
No, like you still have to have the jetway attached to the door. They still have to open the door. In most cases, you're traveling with luggage. So you're going to, you have to stand up as soon as the plane stops, all to run downstairs and wait for your luggage to show up on the luggage carousel.
So bottom line is, we tell them, sit down, clown.
There should be an announcement. You know when they're doing all the safety at the very beginning? Like, hey, when the plane stops, don't stand up right away.
I agree. So,
by the way, this is a seatbelt. Click, yeah. Right? This is the emergency exits. Oh, and when the plane stops, don't stand up. Wait your turn.
All right. Listen to the next podcast. We'll be at you next week.
Later, dude.